Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Daniel, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is the great Seth Partnow of The Athletic, of Dunked On Prime, my double colleague, and we go through, I wouldn't say we spend equal time, not even close to equal time, on the six series that we know at this moment. Seth and I recorded on Thursday before the 1-8 series are finalized, of course. And we talk about the matchups, the dynamics that we're most interested in over the playoff series to come, how these series can change from game to game, and some of them definitely will in terms of player availability and everything else. Episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app and use the CLNS code for a deposit match of up to $100, which is fantastic. And Mood. Go to hellomood.com and get 20% off your first order plus a free THCA pre-roll with the promo code REALGM, R-E-A-L-G-M. Episode with Seth runs a little bit under an hour. A lot of great stuff in here. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on.
A pleasure, as always.
We're recording this on Thursday. We only know six of the eight series that we have a pretty good idea of the general contours of the other ones, even if we don't know the opponent yet. So I don't know that we're going to hit all of them in the depth that they deserve. You can hear my voice preview those in other spaces. So I want to start with you. Which of the series are you most excited about?
Wow, I haven't even thought about that, to be honest with you. It just sort of,
If you want to think about it, I can give you my answer.
Well, please give me your answer, because it's sort of, especially with the play-in game, just kind of letting the postseason wash over me.
Sure. For me, it's Wolves-Suns. And there's a lot going on in that series in terms of like the macro for the franchises, and you have one of the most expensive teams in the league, and then you have the Wolves and their incredible ownership situation going on. But for me, it's mostly on the basketball side of Rudy Gobert, my pick for Defensive Player of the Year. What does he take away for the Suns? What iteration of the Suns do we see? And then even though I've been skeptical of Phoenix a lot of the season, they have played really well against the Timberwolves, including, you know, a couple of days ago. I think now it was 5 days ago as of this point. And so there are some series where I need to take some time to like really see where things shake out. And it's so funny because these teams played so recently. I think I'm going to get overly confident after game one of this series, which may be foolhardy, but I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I remain skeptical of the Suns roster, but I think this is a pretty good matchup for them. At the same time, we tend to talk about these things as if mismatches only go one way.
Sure.
And I think that if Minnesota can involve Gobert enough on offense so that he can stay in as a rim protector. And yeah, he'll give up something in kind of the mid range and in pull up jump shots. But the Suns are pretty tiny, like all told. And yeah, I mean, give or take Bol Bol, who I think counts as because he's obviously someone who even Towns, Reed, or Gobert can move around a little bit. But if Gobert can be a force in the offensive rebound as a dive man, interesting stat I've been tracking all season is kind of the alley-oop leaders. And something that was noted last year by our friend John Krasinski that I picked up on was D'Angelo Russell basically never threw alley-oops to Rudy Gobert, and Mike Conley is very comfortable doing so. And there that was among the league-leading combos this year. So I think that's a weapon, especially, you know, if Minnesota can space some shooting around them.
That's really interesting. And, you know, the idea of like player compatibility and everything else kind of in that vein. And we saw some of that on Sunday. It didn't end up making the difference in terms of the outcome, but Gobert got fouled, I believe it was 7 times in the second quarter. I think it was when Nurkic got in. It might have been the third. Nurkic got into foul trouble. Well, he was in foul trouble in both the second and the third. And then there was just no one on the defensive glass for the Suns that could really make a difference. And that is a really big potential advantage factor. And it doesn't have to be your 7-footer scores a billion points to create advantage. It can be you generate extra possessions, or you just extend them and tire the other team out, or you frustrate them, break their spirit, all that kind of fun stuff. And that could be a factor in this as well. And I mean, the Suns, as offensively gifted as they are, they have great shot makers. You do fantastic work in terms of shot making numbers and all that. They don't have great personnel to make life hard on Minnesota's best offensive players.
And the flip side of their shot making is their shot profile is not awesome. Like part of the reason that like Durant like leads the league in sort of shot making points on my metric is he takes really hard shots, and then he's elite at making them, but it's he's got a decent sized hole to dig out of, and he does it with great aplomb. To some extent there can be a little bit of a math problem almost for Phoenix.
Just because, I mean, it's not the same, but is that kind of paralleling something that I criticized the Nets for, the KD Nets for, where they just had they didn't get any of the low hanging fruit, and they're better at getting, maybe they're kind of like a giraffe, they're better at getting the high stuff than anyone else is, but it's still hard to get it.
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. And they obviously, with their personnel, they are among the most, I don't know if profligate's the right word, but the most high volume in terms of self-created shots in the league. But they take very few self-created threes, which is kind of a surprising stat. And I think is almost illustrative of the issue here. Now that isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like Oklahoma City takes very few, but Oklahoma City doesn't, their self-created shots are Shea driving to the rim, not necessarily a bunch of, 17 footers.
Right. So it creates kind of different quality of shot and everything else.
Yeah.
And also I wonder, and there are arguments both ways here, how Minnesota handles some of, or how the Suns handle in some ways, if Phoenix goes really small. You brought up Bol Bol, and so like let's call KD at five, even if Bol Bol's playing. But like lineups where Royce O'Neal or Bol Bol is like the second smallest Sun, or KD at the five is a decent shorthand for it. There are some theories where it's like, oh, that really spreads them out. The Suns can play credible shooting at all these spots. And one of the fun concepts that Phoenix has danced around at times this year with Vogel is where the two non-Beal, Booker, KD guys are both very efficient in their own ways. Bol Bol doesn't really take, he doesn't really take bad shots because he's just not that part of the offense. And then Grayson Allen has been the league's best three-point shooter this year. So those lineups can do very well in specific circumstances, but Minnesota has a lot of length on the perimeter. They also have the ability to punish those lineups in a couple different ways, one of them being the interior offensive rebounding, all that stuff, but another one being that those Suns lineups, and this is why the small lineups are always so challenging for teams other than a very narrow band, is because they don't have the defensive chops to make the other team challenged, and they don't really, I don't think that they would force like so many turnovers to make it a huge problem, other than maybe in like an isolated game or so.
I think the Timberwolves will be very happy to see Bol Bol on the floor. I don't think that he shot, 42% from three this year, but he only took 50. That's 100 points above his career mark, and he took 50 all year. So I feel
do we get to call that Suggsian, or is that too mean to Jalen Suggs?
This is a callback to Ghosts of Gobert's Past, but it's Terrence Mann-esque.
Oh, ooh, you brought a different kind of pain.
Well, I mean, we've probably talked about it, but that's that, like the first couple minutes of that game, the Terrence Mann game a couple of years ago, is a huge sliding doors thing. Just like if he misses his first two jumpers instead of makes them, like how different is that game if he starts to get a little shy?
Yes, completely, completely fair.
And at the same time, I think that Minnesota would be quite happy for the Phoenix's offense to produce a ton of Bol Bol wing jumpers.
Yeah, I agree. And how those teams kind of fare in their base alignments is one thing. Also, like, I mean, I'm thrilled to get to see Anthony Edwards in this kind of a series, like where it goes for him, how he's developed. And I mean, I believe the last
who guards him, is it going to be Booker?
It might be. I think it's going to be a patchwork quilt, to be sure. The one that
Grayson Allen has no chance in that matchup.
No. I don't think the one that I'm the most interested in, not because I think it would necessarily work, I would love to see what happens with KD. And the argument there is that it's sort of a version, though the kinetic power of Anthony Edwards is so much better than James Harden, of what KD did at times on Harden, where you don't solve the problem with strength or speed, you solve it with just hilarious length, and so you just occupy different space. I like KD as a help defender. I don't think that's going to be fantastic. I'd like to see him try.
I mean, you get into the situation where who guards the bigs then? Because that's sure. An underrated thing about KD throughout his playoff career is his teams have been able to go small because even though he is slight, he's always battled. And battled credibly. Like, you know, I remember that series against the Bucks. He was guarding Brook Lopez for the majority of that series. And you know, the reticence to throw the ball into Brook Lopez in the post when he's got a smaller defender on him gives me, you know, it starts makes my eye twitch a little bit for reasons. no, I'm not thinking of the 2019 Eastern Conference Finals at all. But if you put Durant, this is the problem with Phoenix's roster is you run out of, okay, if he goes there, then who goes there? And then what happens, you know? And really in this case, it's if Durant is on Edwards, who's on Towns?
Sure.
And, you know, Towns is a strong enough – now maybe you do that because you think you can get Towns to, you know, commit some offensive fouls and turn the ball over, which has certainly been a problem for him, especially in sort of high-pressure situation where his visible desire to want to do something can be a problem.
And like Edwards, I'm excited to see Towns in a kind of a different series, a different format. How much of what happened a couple of years ago or last year? What? God, that was last year, wasn't it? Was it? Yeah. No. Yeah. Whatever persists. Like, what part of that persists, and what part of that was just the mania of that bizarre series? And yeah, that was 2 years ago. And so with Towns, you have those questions, and then. I also, it feels like there's going to be at least one, probably three games of this series that are just, does McDaniels hit his open threes? Which is like the least fun version of this, which I think is going to happen, is just, oh, we're going to leave these three players open, and it's just the variance on whether those shots go in or not.
A lot of Kyle Anderson triple clutch jumpers.
Yes. Or one clutch that is the length of five clutches. And so, yeah, I brought it up because Nate and I did a pretty much a gamer on the last time these teams played. And I brought up the Kyle Anderson versus Grayson Allen matchup because Anderson was hunting Allen in the times when Anthony Edwards was off the floor. And I was like, you know, that's kind of weird. They're like, well, I mean, that game was a little bit different because Towns was still on a minutes limit coming back. We don't know exactly what his availability, like what his capacity is going to be at the start of the series, much less the finish. But so they'll have better things to turn to. But part of the reason they went to that is like, well, we didn't really have anything better in the non-Edwards minutes. But Chris Finch will have better. He will have better options on the table just because Towns in particular will be more available.
I think that's right. It's a very big series for Carl Anthony Towns. I don't think there's any question. I mean, in part, every playoff series with this construction is going to be a big series for Carl Anthony Towns, just because I think that, you know, for the sake of the Wolves, he's probably the guy that if they get to the conclusion that it doesn't work, he's the guy who they're going to try hardest to trade, but also the guy who becomes the hardest to trade if he has bad series and they get eliminated.
Yes, that is the fundamental challenge that teams are going to do. I mean, the Hawks may be in this boat now where it's like, oh, we're open to trading Trae Young now. Great. Teams aren't as interested in trading for him at this juncture in time. And Towns is a more complicated commodity with his injuries and everything else. Lots more to discuss, but first a message from Prize Picks. NBA playoffs are obviously right on the horizon. You can get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. And you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy app. I really like that Prize Picks is player specific to my intuition. I think that works a little bit better. And it's very straightforward. You find the player projection that you find interesting, and then you just go more or less on that number. And that's easy to connect with. And of course, it'll make the playoffs more fun, though they're plenty of fun anyway. And the way that you can check out Prize Picks is you download their app today, and then you use the code CLNS. Because that gets you a first deposit match up to $100. It also tells PrizePicks that you came from us. So download the PrizePick app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Where do you want to go next? What I gave you some time to think.
I mean, I think that the if this wasn't like the 93rd time they'd matched up, the Clippers and Mavericks would be interesting. And it still is interesting, but it's sort of I sort of feel that there's like, all right, it sort of boils down to who wins between Kawhi and Luka almost. And like certainly the last time they played, it was Luka early in the series, and then Kawhi very much in the end of the series. I will say that there is a little bit of an interesting wrinkle is that Dallas is probably going to play with a big,
yes,
most of the time. Which, I mean, as good as Daniel Gafford has been for them, that maybe lets the Clippers keep Zubats on the floor more.
And that matters more for this year's Clippers team because they don't really have good small ball lineups anymore. They've lost a lot of that personnel. I mean, you could argue the PJ Tucker ones, but most of the season we didn't see that at all.
I mean, I think that's if we see a lot of PJ Tucker in this series, that would scream of desperation, I would think. That's not the one I want to talk about. So but we ended up talking about it. I think Knicks Sixers is that's a series that's probably going to be ugly. It's probably going to be intense. There's probably going to be a lot of bodies on the floor.
And that's not just Joel Embiid being on the floor each possession. It's other bodies as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating series. An interesting bit will be the games in Philly. That was a fascinating thing about the playoff that play-in game was just how I don't want to say fickle, but the crowd could not decide whether the Sixers were faces or heels for a lot of that game.
The only thing they decided was that Tobias Harris had a problem.
Oh, Tobias Harris has X-Pac heat.
He generates intense reactions, and yes. It's that will be, and I mean, so you have the Philly games, and then you have the MSG games, which could be a lot of fun, and I mean, the Tobias Harris part of that could actually be pretty entertaining too. And for me, I just did the series preview of that with Nate like shortly before we recorded, and something that I brought up in that was a hearkening back. We've already invoked 2019 once. So let's do it again. Nick Nurse coaching against a team that heavily relies on a single offensive player. And that I thought was one of the most fun, most fascinating tactical wrinkles of the 2019 finals is when Clay... Well, I mean, I thought it was.
Oh, the finals.
The finals. Yeah, okay. I'm not invoking that. The NBA finals.
Like, are they going to play boxes and elbows against Brunson?
I mean, maybe. And so... So basically, Nurse went to some, you know, including famously box and one and some other approaches, particularly in the minutes when Steph Curry played without KD, because KD was injured a lot of that series, and the times he went to it most when Klay Thompson was off the floor. And those non-KD, non-Klay minutes are actually not that far apart from the Knicks creation non-Brunson in that, and that you can help off of some of their players. There's some limited shooters. And if, you know, Josh Hart can do some things, Dante DiVincenzo can do some things, but if that is what Thibodeau goes to because you can scheme Brunson, you got to scheme the ball out of Brunson's hands, I would say that's pretty close to a victory for the Sixers in those Brunson on minutes.
I mean, I feel like the other Knicks are, this is going to sound weird, but the other Knicks are more capable than the other available Warriors were in that series. At that point.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, Ananobi can put the ball in the hoop. Obviously, DiVincenzo's had a great season. Isaiah Hartenstein is not, you know, an offensive creator, but he's someone you can throw the ball to, and he can, you know, run a DHO, make a play, probably in a superior fashion than Kevon Looney could. So obviously it's also like how much of Boyan do we see? I have been, frankly disappointed in how much they have used him. And some of that is sort of Tibbs being Tibbs, but that feels like, a spot where you know, that the guy off of ball rotation who could make a play, that he seems to be well positioned to be that guy.
there will be a need for the Knicks to have players like that on the floor. And I mean, paralleling it on the other end, I thought that was something, even though it wasn't like primary creation, having somebody who can make good decisions and quick decisions was a significant part of what Nikola Batum did so well, other than 5 of 8 from 3 in the second half for Philly.
Buddy Hield also, I thought.
Yeah.
In that game, I during the game, I sort of, this was before like Lowry made a couple of big plays, but I would have been very tempted to close that game with Hield instead of Lowry because of how effective Hield had been, you know, kind of driving the ball against that janky zone.
Hield, he did a nice job, and I mean, picking his spots and basically understanding when he had the advantage and not overplaying the advantage when he did. And that is actually a really hard thing for a lot of players to do, especially when you don't have the ball in your hands a lot. But Hield has had moments where he was in more of an evaluation role. I mean, the Spain pick and rolls with the Pacers, there were times where he had to do a little bit more decision making out there.
That's right.
See, I mean, this that series, I mean, the other part of it that is a really fascinating question, Nate brought this up, was over the last couple of years, particularly late last year and then the rest of this year, we've seen both with Jokic and Embiid and, you know, these star centers, the approach of don't put your best defender on them. Use that, you know, the tuck wagon is a version of that. There have been a lot of them over the last couple of years. OG and Anunoby could potentially pull that off. Be the primary defender on Embiid, and that would allow Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson to be somewhere else and still affecting the play.
I mean, this gets us to the elephant in the room, which is Embiid's health. Some of it was the zone, but he did not really look very interested in carving himself, you know, post position and working down low for most of the game on Monday. If they're going to go with Anunoby, as strong as he is, I still think that, you know, it's a total eclipse. So like Embiid can flash to the bottom of the circle and just bury him under the basket, and then he's got the touch to finish that. Does he have the legs basically to do that a lot, or is he going to sort of I always get frustrated when commentators talking about settling. But Embiid deciding to come to the mid post, to come to the nail, to get the ball all the time. If they're guarding him with Anunoby, that's absolutely settling.
It is. And will Embiid be willing and able to do his work early in the possession, whether that involves having the ball or not having the ball? And I mean, there were some moments in the Heat game where he was just not super engaged on that front. And then how do the Knicks defend Tyrese Maxey? Like, I think that in the base lineups, that's going to put a lot on various different Knicks shoulders. And I really do like some of New York's defenders. Their rim protection has been good. Like, they've been able to weather some storms. But Maxey, like that, I wonder how they're going to fare.
I think they just put Josh Hart on him.
Yeah, and that might work.
And DiVincenzo, and to the extent that they're going to put him in pick and roll instead of just saying, okay, be fast and run by the guy, like Dante DiVincenzo is very good at navigating ball screens.
He is extremely good at that.
I think that's especially considering that I'm going to guess that the Knicks will be fine with Harris becoming a focal point of Philly's offense.
A bold strategy, but one that could be rewarded.
I mean, honestly, especially in the road games, because I kind of think the Philly crowd might be in his head a little bit.
I mean, they kind of should be, but yeah. That's such a surreal situation overall. And the Knicks, like, I mean, one of the ways I've described this series is that I think the Knicks' base alignments are actually better suited to handle Philadelphia than most teams. But what I worry about with them is the variations on that. Do they have counters? Do they have counter punches offensively and defensively? So if the Sixers, Nurse, personnel, all that kind of stuff can take something away, what do they go to? Is it more like whack-a-mole where you know, one defensive strategy doesn't work, so you go to something else, so you do something else? Or is it more like, well, crap, that didn't work, and the Knicks were fortunate that Cleveland in that series last year, I mean, the Knicks played well, they deserved to win that series going away, which they did. But Cleveland never, as I recall it, a year later, Cleveland never really forced them to do things that the Knicks weren't already going to do in the first place. And so they beat them in their areas of strength.
I mean, some of that was, I mean, Cleveland had a, had essentially a four player roster last year. And also so they didn't really have, I think the key sort of version of that is if Philly finds something schematic. I'm not sure they have anything really personnel wise. If they find something schematic to make life difficult for Brunson, are we going to see the sort of some of the things we saw from the Knicks against Atlanta 2 years ago, where it's just like, oh, wow, Julius Randle is being forced to his left and beating his head against the wall, and they don't have any counter or anything. And you know, the Knicks, for as much as the midseason trades, I think, helped them, that's a spot where they might miss Emmanuel quickly.
It is. I hadn't thought about it necessarily in that way, but it really is a place where quickly.
I mean, it's interesting because on one hand, like quickly would give an option to sort of attack Maxey at the offensive end, but with him gone and you know, Deuce McBride getting a lot of those minutes, you know, that's another very credible defender, very credible point of attack defender that they can sort of rotate on to Maxey.
And I think that Tibbs is going to lean pretty heavily on McBride. Like, I don't know how the Knicks bench is going to, like, how it's going to function necessarily over on this series, but well, I do think that...
I mean, they're going to play 23 minutes a game combined. Is how.
Mitchell Robinson, we'll say the non-fives will. Yeah. Mitchell Robinson's going to get some time. I wonder if we're going to see some Achiu at the four, just by virtue of, like, just having more size out there to deal with Joel. And also, Jalen Brunson probably, for me, will be the early tell on the nature of the officiating on these play on offense initiated foul calls. Brunson is not necessarily the foremost practitioner, but because A, he has the ball in his hands a ton, and B, he does this a ton, I think that he may end up being the person of, like, okay, so that's generally where the league intends for the line to be for this postseason.
I mean, he is definitely I never thought of him as a grifter in sort of some of the way, like, but he does initiate a lot of contact because his style is sort of bump, get you off balance, create space, and then, you know, beat you as you try to recover.
Yeah, in a weird way, I think you can argue that he kind of comes by it slightly more honestly than some guys do.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that honesty really matters.
It's not I'm trying to grift to draw foul. It's I'm trying to use my physicality to create an advantage. And, oh, you held on to me. That's not fair. You can't be physical back.
Any other wrinkles on this one that you're most interested in?
I mean, I think that how the minutes distribution between Hartenstein and Robinson goes. This is an interesting matchup. I think that Hartenstein is just a better player than Mitchell Robinson at this point.
Same.
But in a vacuum, a better basketball player. But Robinson's, you know, stouter. At the same time, he's also, I mean, he's can be foul prone. Is he sort of disciplined enough to not send him Embiid to the line a ton?
And also especially the defensive glass for the Sixers / the offensive glass for the Knicks, like that's going to be a battleground for the entire series, and it will swing at least one game, probably more than one.
Yeah, Bucks Pacers is all about Bucks defensive pace, I think is the way I'll put it.
Transition in half court, yeah. Defensive pace, or is it the proportions?
Yeah. I mean, it sort of blends together. I mean, I'll note that the season series between these teams is basically worthless.
It all occurred before the Siakam trade. Most of it occurred before Halliburton's hamstring issue.
Well, no, not just that. It all occurred when Adrian Griffin was still the coach of the Bucks.
Oh, that's true.
More to the point. I mean, Kelly Eco and I did a piece previewing this series a little bit at The Athletic, and the difference between the Bucks propensity for allowing transition off their misses from the Griffin period of the season to the Rivers period of the season, that's a bigger gap between those two than in the transition percentage allowed the stingiest and most profligate. So they have a larger in-season difference between coaches than the best and worst in the league over the whole season.
It's incredible. And it also completely tracks what I saw this year.
Yeah. And the other bit is that Eric Name is writing about this for the weekend a little bit, but Halliburton's ability his success shooting the ball off the dribble since he came back has been minimal. And just the fact, if he's not someone that you have to like either get way over the screen or switch, show, blitz, something to not allow him to shoot a pull-up three, if that's not really the case where he is at physically or with his jumper right now, that opens up a whole different range of defensive options for the Bucks in a way that I think is very, very, very positive for them, especially when combined with the fact that after trading for Siakam and Ben Mathurin getting injured, Pacers don't have the shooting that they did to really start the season. It's, you know, a lot of it's can Andrew Nembhard, can Aaron Nesmith make jumpers? Can, you know, Pascal Siakam make jumpers? Is going to be a lot of it. And so that's a that I think is a way that should allow Milwaukee to keep Brook Lopez on the floor. Which is important, A, both schematically and just from a talent perspective. Again, this is not a deep team, and you do something that makes them play their third or fourth player less, and their guys five through whatever, or five and a half through whatever. I mean, you know, Portis is competent at least, but you know, you get down the roster, and then there's a lot of not sure about that as a playoff guy. So if they can keep Lopez in, it's both beneficial because of what he brings, but also just the gap between him and sort of the next man up is so large.
Exactly, and it could potentially be even larger with Doc Rivers. I had our mutual friend Mo DeKeel on a few weeks ago, and we were talking about like what's going on, and he brought up with Doc that his kind of operating theory with Rivers is that he will play the guy, like his panic button is the guy with the most experience. And I am not saying that those individuals, which I kind of narrow to Patrick Beverley, Jay Crowder, and maybe Danilo Gallinari in a fascinating way, are worse. Like, this is not a circumstance where they're, you know, the guy that is always my base with this is going to be Montrezl Harrell in 2020. But it's not necessarily that those guys are worse than the alternatives. It's that they might not be better, and they might not be better in the specific need that the Bucks have at that moment.
I think that certainly in a playoff setting, I think that the desire to go Pat Beverley over Malik Beasley is probably right.
It's at least understandable. I mean, yeah. Beasley, I like Beasley's aggressiveness from three, and his defense is overrated, but it is also existent. So,
I mean, he's a guy who I think his on-ball defense is okay, and off-ball, he's kind of a train wreck.
Fair.
Which is, you know, he's not Dame Lillard, who just plasters on every screen and like, you know, slides down the wall like a toon. My kids have discovered and love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So that's a movie that's been in heavy rotation.
I have never seen that.
Really?
You should
watch it. It's good.
I have a recommendation now.
Yeah.
Plenty more to discuss, but first the message from Mood. We are now in April, so you can think about how you want to celebrate 420, April 20th, and little known trivia is that I went to the high school that claims that they invented the term, and if you want to go through that, you can. But there are a lot of different ways to celebrate it, and Mood can help you achieve just the right high with their federally legal flower, gummies, vapes, and more. So you can browse by different Moods, get 20% off your first order, and a free THCA pre-roll with the promo code REALGM at hellomood.com. I've tried a series of their products now. I mostly focus in the sleep area. Sleeping better is something that matters a lot to me. I've been impressed, but also they have some euphoric products that I've enjoyed as well. So really enjoy what Mood is doing, and it was very convenient. They have a lot of options. I would definitely recommend checking it out. And if you do so, which you definitely should, go to hellomood.com, HELLOMOOD.com. Use the code REALGM, which tells them that you came from us, and gets you 20% off your first order plus a free THCA pre-roll. So check it out at Mood. Is it time to talk about Ghosts of Christmas Past and the Ty Lue versus Jason Kidd coaching matchup in Clippers Mavs?
No.
I can't believe I just picked a Jason Kidd coach team to win a playoff series as an inferior seed, but I did.
I Yeah, okay. To do that, that's a little bit of a bet against Kawhi's health, I think.
It is. It most definitely is. And also, like, the passage of time. You know, like that, as well as he's played overall this year, but coming back from a seemingly kind of concerning nebulous knee injury, Lawrence Frank had some comments today about it being, like, swelling that hasn't quite gone down. It's like, it's been a while, man. Like,
he's had knee and quad swelling that hasn't quite ever gone down for 5 years.
Exactly. And so
and the fact that he's able to play back to backs this year was
stunning.
Was pretty fascinating. Yeah.
And I mean, well, there at some point there will be a very interesting conversation on there was the I'm sure the NBA is going to trumpet out the stat that the star players played more this year than they have in the prior years. And see, like,
and then they all got hurt in the play-in.
And then they all got hurt in the play-in, or they were dealing with nagging injuries in the playoffs, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm not going to prejudge that. I want to see where things go. And also the randomness that can happen. Some of those guys just stayed healthier this year than they do in other seasons. But Clippers, Mavs, I mean, lots of star power. And I wonder, so I think there's justifiably a lot of attention on Kawhi versus Luka, and whether how much time Kawhi will spend on Luka, I think it's more 5+ in the series rather than 1-4, depending on availability. I'm more concerned from a Clipper standpoint. A big part of why I picked the Mavs in the series is I think they're going to really struggle to defend Kyrie Irving.
Interesting.
And there are some things they can turn to. You know, they'll try Terrence Mann, they'll go to some other stuff, but Kyrie's ability to carve up flawed players, and that Paul George is still a very good defensive player, but the thing that you lose first for this perimeter player, and we can invoke the guy who I think of because I see more of him in person than almost anybody, is Klay Thompson, where a guy who's bigger, who could still defend point of attack, the first thing that goes for them is the ability to defend quick guards. And Kyrie isn't Maxi, he isn't that type of guy, but in some ways he has elements of that game still in him, even at 29, 30, whatever his age is at this moment.
Well, he's probably a better shape than he's been in.
True.
Since Cleveland won the title with him.
And since the Clippers are going to be playing a higher proportion of the time with Zubats on the floor because they just don't have that many other options, or at least you could even say with a five, because they don't have that many five out iterations that are viable this year. The Mavs don't either, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think that's going to give Irving some real estate to kind of open some stuff up, and generally Dallas plays personnel, whether we're talking the Irving plus Luka minutes or the Irving solo minutes, to make that work. And there are also, like, there are a number of different matchups, and I mean, Harden is the most obvious, but there'll be others for the Clippers, particularly when they get into their bench units, where you're like, that's not working too well. And if, like, for example, if Russell Westbrook doesn't do well in that, but like, can't hold his own a little bit against Kyrie, then they have much, much bigger problems, because then you're having to get deeper in the well. And the Clippers, like all of these second apron teams, including Boston, though Boston hasn't had to deal with this as much, they're extraordinarily shallow in terms of viable rotation players. And so the first question is, are those guys healthy? And so some teams are going to run into that issue. But then the second issue is, are they, you know, if you want to use the crucible as the framing, or you want to use whatever you want to do, are they viable in this series in that specific combination? And if for the Suns, for the Bucks, for the Clippers, that pool gets even more shallow, it's a gargantuan problem.
I have almost a galaxy brain question to ask. Is that does the Kyrie Irving matchup actually help Westbrook defensively, in that taking on that challenge might limit, like, his worst sort of instincts of his defensive game in terms of gambling and roaming and stuff like that?
You can't be a space case and a gambler when your job is Kyrie Irving. That's fair. I actually think there's
It's not just that you can't. It's just from a mentality standpoint. It's like that's kind of the level of sort of respect that Irving kind of commands from other NBA players is like, that's so like, see this as a challenge. I am going after that guy. And then, you know, his physicality and athleticism, if he stays home and doesn't, you know, gamble and roam, I don't think he can stop Kyrie, but I think he can bother him. And I think, I mean, we haven't even talked about the other end of the floor. Like, who does Luka guard? Who does Kyrie guard? Who guards Kawhi? Who guards PG?
I'm assuming Luka is primarily going to be on man. Just the hiding.
Man is the hider, but you got two guys you want to hide.
True. But I think of Luka as the one that's kind of more pressing in the sense of, like, especially because you need him to conserve his energy, when particularly in the late, if this series is close late, where they're going to have it's going to be tougher for him to make things happen.
I mean, how much are we going to see Tim Hardaway Jr. guarding Paul George, and how bad does that get for Dallas?
It could get real bad. Yeah. And Dallas, you know, I brought this up a lot. Yeah,
The Clippers can't guard Dallas's guards, and Dallas can't guard the Clippers' forwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to the extent, I mean, okay, sort of PJ Washington and his, I guess, is this his first playoff? It's certainly his first playoffs in a while. If
not I believe that the Hornets didn't make it out of the play-in during his career.
Yeah, I mean, they got beaten the play-in so bad that they got Borrego fired, right?
This will be PJ Washington's first playoff game.
Yeah, yeah, and Gafford hasn't been in the playoffs in many a year, and certainly he's going to have a larger role than he's had in the playoffs before. So wondering about a lot of the stuff that really worked for Dallas coming down the stretch. How much of it continues to do so in a playoff setting and B in this specific matchup.
Totally a fair concern. And while I talked about how in Suns Wolves, I think I'll have a better sense of the series at the beginning, my instinct is that Clippers Mavs is going to have some ebb and flow, and that there are some other things that these coaches are going to turn to later on. And so I'm not going to feel as confident. We don't have much time left. I do want to get your quick thoughts on Cavs Magic. It's going to be, I know there are a lot of people making the NBA TV jokes, and it could be a gross series game to game to watch, but I'm fascinated to see who kind of who thrives in this muck and who can kind of, who gets consumed by this muck.
I have no feeling for, I mean, the Magic can't score enough.
I mean, there's a chance that Paolo comes out of this and we're like, oh shit. Like, he's a real, like, he does more against Mobley and some of these than we thought. But there's also a chance that, like, Paolo's a really good young player, but this is just not the right series for him.
Well, and also, I mean, I think if I'm honest, I think Paolo's is getting a little bit overrated at this point. I mean, he is.
I wouldn't have had him in the All-Star game, for example.
No, I mean, him making the All-Star game over, like, Porzingis is crazy. But the Magic were good, and someone had to make it. It should have been Franz Wagner, if we're just going for, like, I think Franz is frankly a better player, though he's probably, like, and his better playerness will express itself more if they sort of continue to improve their overall roster. But Banchero is the guy. I mean, he's going to be the sin eater who has to take a bunch of tough shots. Like, he's going to end up having to take the shots Donovan Mitchell wants to take.
I like that phrasing.
That's the other side. Like, you know, of the coin is I've never been a Donovan Mitchell guy. I think we know that. And he might shoot Cleveland to a series win. He could just as easily shoot them out of the series. And we've seen both versions of him in his playoff career in Utah.
He's
going to take some tough shots in this series. Let's just say that there's going to be some tough contested pull up jumpers going up from Donovan Mitchell in every game of the series.
I try not to, like, get too much to index, not even to index, because I don't really care that much about it, but to think too much about some of the discourses I see online. But there is, every once in a while, I see this thing about, like, playoff Donovan Mitchell, and I'm like, you're only, like, you're deliberately, like, la la laing over a lot of the sample there. He has had some incandescent moments, but there are also some really, really rough patches in there.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where you got to be, like, he's had some pretty bad series, and it's one of those things where you've got to be pretty good and pretty talented to be that destructive to your team. But that means if you have that kind of talent, okay, the ball might go in this series, like we saw in the Denver series a couple of years ago. And I almost feel like his reputation was probably helped by losing that series, if we're honest.
It's sort of like in some ways like the TV show that gets canceled too early, so they never had a chance to screw it up.
Yeah. So they don't go to the next round, and I believe they would have played the Warriors in the next round.
Yes, I believe so.
No, that's not right. They would have played the Clippers in the next round.
I was counting it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, and it probably doesn't go as well for him, losing in the finals is somehow harder on the reputation than like losing a close fought conference finals. I had to remind myself that a couple times. So, like the most recent time was, I think, when I was like thinking about Jimmy Butler versus Jason Tatum after the 22 finals. And it's like, because Tatum had some problems in the finals. Like, wait a minute, I would be giving Jimmy Butler credit for not having to face the Warriors, essentially,
There are some weird situations where like the best like numerical playoff performances like per game and all that type of stuff are by teams that actually players on teams that don't actually make it that far because you never had to face the strongest opposition.
Yeah. Speaking of facing the strongest opposition, can we just breeze by Lakers Nuggets?
Consider it breezed.
Okay. The Lakers have got to show me something. And for all the talk about, you know, D'Angelo Russell turning over a new leaf, I mean, he was, you know, Jose Alvarado was cooking him down the stretch. And he's about to come, like, and we forget what the terrible things Jamal Murray did to him last year. He was talking about how Darvin trusted Dennis Schroeder more. It's like, yeah, because he was watching the series and Schroeder was competitive and you weren't. So, Anthony Davis looked bad physically on Monday as well. Now, maybe the rest of the week helps him, but he's been among the league leaders in playing time this year, which is, you know, credit to him for being able to stay on the floor. But he looks like a guy who's played like way more minutes than he's used to in a season.
It will be usurped aggressively by at least one of the 1-8 series, but for right now, Nuggets Lakers is the series I'm least interested in watching. It could defy my expectations. I always leave room in my evaluation
Boston against whoever is
exactly like it's going to be usurped. We just don't know that series yet. Yeah. So
considering that the Heat will be without Jimmy Butler if they manage to win tomorrow, and
I'm very excited for the Bulls to take the Celtics to six games. And
are you counting the first two games they play next year?
I'm just thinking about the Hawks last year and all that kind of nonsense. But no, the Celtics, they should be able to take care of business. And exactly, like it will be that series. It's just that we don't know who they're facing yet. And so I'm really interested. And then the other kind of the element in this, you and I have talked over the years a lot about styles makes fights and all the different playoff nuances.
I'm sort of mourning for the not getting OKC against Zion led Pellies.
So can you clarify that for me? I'm just trying
to because I think we have to figure that I don't think we'll see, like, assuming that the Pelicans
we don't get that Zion. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I frankly don't think he comes back during that series. I would be very reticent to want to give, especially given like how bad and
so,
lingering.
Is your argument that you'd rather see King's Thunder than non-Zion Pel's Thunder? Because I was in the building. Golden One. The Kings were fantastic on Monday or Tuesday, but I don't know. I think that they each have their own merits. And
I mean, I think there will be a defender in the same area code as Keegan Murray, I think, in that series where there was he had 11 uncontested 3-point attempts in that game, which was the second most any player had in a game all season.
I didn't talk about it as much on Dunked On in the Gamer afterwards. Before the game, posited, I'm like, well, the benefit of playing this iteration of the Kings is that they only play one dangerous shooter in their starting lineup, and then he's open the entire first quarter. And it's like, what is going on here? But he played extremely well. And Keon Ellis was fantastic.
No, he was.
A Keon Ellis, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander foundation of like the defensive matchups for that at the start of a theoretical Thunder King series would be a lot of fun.
It's just that the Kings just don't have enough. It's, you know, Sabonis might have some moments against Chet Holmgren on offense, but they just like the number of possessions where Shai will bring the ball up the floor, point it, like motion Holmgren to come up and set the screen for him is like I think we'll see that play once or twice, put it that way.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
I think we can kind of call it there. There are two series, of course, that we don't know, but we've talked about how neither of those is necessarily going to tickle our fancy. This is going to be fun. Go ahead.
What's your finals prediction? Are you going boring and saying Nuggets Celtics?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Nuggets
Celtics and Nuggets beat the Celtics to repeat. That's my pre-playoff prediction.
That is what I'm saying as well. And so the weirdest part about it is I think Boston has a significantly clearer path to making the finals. I mean, especially now that their side of the bracket is basically just decimated.
And getting a somewhat improving health Sixers to take a whack at the Knicks, I think, helps them as well.
Now, there is a concern that so they will only face one of maximum of the Sixers, Knicks, and Bucks. However, and they will face them later, which means that whoever gets out of that is going to be presumably playing better and being healthier, because that's if you can't, then you're not going to survive. But it's only one. And I think that's going to be...
I think it's also the fact that like Embiid is probably only going to get healthier as the playoffs go along. And Giannis will only be on the floor more as the playoffs go along. I enjoyed the Bucks team president breaking the news that he's out on Sunday today. That was nicely done on some random morning radio show. Oh, he's out on Sunday. It's like, thanks. That's probably not where that information should come from. But do you?
And then for the Nuggets, they have a harder path, but because we've seen it, and even though last year's West was anomalous for a few different reasons, like I'm so confident that their floor is high that I don't think they're good. Like they could absolutely lose a series, not in the Western Conference playoffs. Absolutely could. But I'm, especially because even though some of these teams have played really well recently, I'm just like, I think they're going to be fine. And so,
the reason Jokic is the best player in the world, especially in a playoff setting, is there's stuff you can try, and Rui Hachimura might work on him for a game or for a half. But the ability to be versatile and just figure it out, and the fact that their group has so much, especially Jokic and Murray, has so much sort of familiarity and just the ability to read each other so well that they can just figure stuff out on the fly.
And they start from a position of such strength that they don't have to do that often. Like there's less scrambling for answers for the Nuggets than anyone else, and they're also better at finding answers than pretty much everyone else.
Right. They can make adjustments without changing lineups, essentially, which is super interesting.
Okay, which of the six series that we already know, which of them to you, last question, which of them do you think is the toughest for you to predict or the most likely where you're wrong, if you think of those as different questions?
Since I'm leaning Clippers in Dallas, Clippers, I think that that's both the closest and the one I'm most likely wrong.
The one that I've been thinking about, so I actually picked the Pacers in part because of Giannis's availability. I do think there's a chance that the Bucks just win the first two games, even if he's not playing game one, doesn't play game two. I'm just like, well, crap. Like that seems distinctly possible for me. It's one of the ways that I actually think about series is like what is the likelihood that I wake up that game two or game three finishes and I'm just belligerently angry at myself with my pick. And for me right now, that's the one that's leading in my brain.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of lower on the Pacers going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. than a lot of people seem to be.
I mean, the Bucks. I was planning on picking the Bucks in the series. It's just that it seems like we keep getting a little bit of worse news on Giannis every time something comes out. I'm a little bit like a little bit further, but we'll see. Hopefully, that's not the case. You don't want any series to be decided by injury, even though we know a few of them will be.
But I think that's. I mean, you balance that with the fact that Haliburton has not been right since his injury. So
yeah.
Well.
I kept you longer than I said I would. I'm going to thank you so much for taking time. That was a blast.
Thanks a lot, Danny. Great as always.
Thanks again to Seth Partnow for taking the time to come on. You can read his excellent work at The Athletic. You can also read it. Seth's Nerdnoshes are a part of Dunked on Prime, and both of those are completely excellent. He does such great work, and excited to see everything that he puts out for the playoffs. And you can also, of course, if you don't already follow him on social media, If you want to support Real GM Radio, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. You can subscribe, download every episode. That is particularly useful for this podcast because it's never going to come out on a specific day of the week. When you can't get into a habit, subscribing solves that for you. And if we are not in the podcast player of your choosing, please let me know, and I will pass that along to people who can actually solve that problem. You can also help other people find the show through word of mouth, social media, leaving a rating and review in a podcast player. And most importantly, for this podcast and any other that has them, you can check out our sponsors. Prize Picks. You can download their app and use the CLNS code for that deposit match up to $100. And of course, importantly, that also tells them that you came from us, which I deeply appreciate. And then Mood, hellomood.com with RealGM as the promo code, and that gets you 20% off your first order plus a free THCA pre-roll. Hellomood.com, RealGM, R-E-A-L-G-M is the promo code there. You can also, of course, check out my other work, Dunked On Prime. This is one of the best times of the year to be a subscriber. We will break down basically every game until series get non-competitive, and we're, of course, doing series previews and everything else like that, and we'll be getting into offseason. I actually have started my draft work already, though I don't think we'll get to that on the pod soon. I like to be a little bit ahead in case I get consumed by the playoffs. Then written work at The Athletic. I had a new piece that came out this week about analyzing the free agent class in terms of star starters and rotation players, which I thought was fun to do. And that's out now. And then I'm working on another one. We'll see when that gets out. It's not even to editorial yet, so I can't be like, oh, it's coming soon. I don't know that just yet. Then Nate and I are doing our broadcasts for the playoffs on Playback. You can check that out. The link should be out there, but I believe it's playback.tv/NateDuncanNBA. And we'll be doing, we haven't figured out the exact number, but probably about three, four a week in the early rounds. And then we'll, of course, tone that down when there are fewer basketball games. But it's a way for us to live call and you can follow in. And there are ways that you can, if the video isn't syncing up, that because of geographic restrictions, that can potentially be smooth. So you can check that out. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is a promise. I'm not always the greatest at replying, though I do genuinely like to. It's just not something that I can always pull off. And that is all for now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.